listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Kalula and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Wake up, Hollywood. This is your host of the most, Nikki Kalula. We're going to jump right into this interview. We have a very special guest, Landau Eugene Murphy Jr., right? Did I say it all right?
That's right.
How are you, dude? Happy holidays, by the way.
I'm good, man. Happy holidays to everybody out there, including yourself.
So I read your bio and I was checking out your YouTube videos. I'm a musician myself, and man, your story is definitely one in a million, and it's such a cool story that we're going to just discover and explore today. But I wanted to ask you, let's go way back. Let's go back to the time you first fell in love with music. Tell me what your moment of zen was that made you want to start singing, or what made you fall in love with music.
I think it was, you know, dancing in the living room with my brothers and sisters, you know, listening to Michael Jackson's album, the Off the Wall album at the time, I think it was.
Great record.
Yeah, that's one of the greatest records of all time to me. And it just came from there. And then in 1983, we seen Michael Jackson really break out, and he did the Motown 25th anniversary special, and we saw him moonwalk on television for the first time. And then just that whole Motown thing. I grew up in that Motown era, that Motown house. And my mom and my aunties and grandma, all used to listen to Marvin Gaye and stuff like that. So, I mean, to see that 1983 Motown 25th anniversary special was great to me. That's just something that I always wanted to do besides, you know, be an NBA basketball player.
We share that same passion for both, yeah. Man, because I used to always love balling it up on courts. Yeah. I actually performed on that very stage that Michael Jackson did that moonwalk, but I didn't realize. I think I performed on that stage when I was 11 years old, and then later did I realize it was the same theater, you know, as you, because I remember seeing that live too. Yeah. But you know, you don't remember the amphitheater or the stage, yeah, or the auditorium. But it was the Civic Auditorium in Pasadena. I'm blanking on the name, but I remember making that, like, oh my God moment, because it was so iconic, and watching that, I had the same effect. But I love that you're heavily influenced by Motown. So was your family musically inclined? Were they playing instruments and singing too?
Yeah, my grandfather was a preacher, and he was part of the Pioneer Five. So they wore like top hats and canes and tuxedos. And he was a preacher.
That's awesome.
You know, my dad was all in a lot of funk bands and gospel bands and things like that. My brothers and sisters, you know.
What do you play? What did your dad play?
He plays the bass guitar and the drums.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I was raised around music. I mean, I was always around bands and things like that, and like that Motown sound. But my whole Frank Sinatra thing came from I guess it started in my childhood from that same Motown 25th anniversary when they showed Nat King Cole singing Mona Lisa Smile. Mona Lisa is my mom's name.
Wow, really?
Yes. Now, as I reach back into my childhood, I used to always see Bugs Bunny and Merry Melodies and Looney Tunes making fun of the Rat Pack, Dean Martin, Bing Crosby, Frank Sinatra with the singing rooster, and, you know, the chickens would melt when he would come out and sing. And so it was always in my life, and I just didn't realize it. But as I grew older, my mom and my dad split. My mom moved me from West Virginia to Detroit, Michigan. And that's the whole Motown, that's Hitsville, that's everything. So by the time I got there, it was like 84. Now this is like hip-hop, and LL Cool J was at the top of his game. Run DMC was still in that thing, Crush Groove, and you know what I'm saying? Right. All of that stuff was happening. And it was a lot of gang violence that I had to adapt to, you know what I'm saying? So on the basketball courts, instead of trash talking people, I would sing Fly Me to the Moon after I dunked on
you. I read that in your bio. I was like, yeah, man, that's crazy. You'd sink a three-pointer or something, and then you start singing some Frank. That's awesome. Yeah.
And it was just funny. It just it stopped a lot of violence on the playgrounds where I was playing at, in Brightmoor and Refford and over in that area of Schoolcraft and Evergreen in Detroit, Michigan.
That's amazing. And you know what? It's like you have a very unusual story, which, you know, when I was reading about it, I was like completely fascinated because, you know, we grew up both loving sports. I'm a diehard Lakers fan. I'm a diehard basketball fan. And, you know, I was like, there were a lot of things that you and I have parallels. But then you've gone through so much more than most people ever go through. And you've remained to have this, like, amazing positive spirit. How did you stay positive during some of your downward spirals?
Just reflecting on the people that were around me that was, you know, conscious enough to give me good advice. Because life is about a roller coaster. It is ups and downs, but you have to take those downs as well as you take the ups. And a lot of people can't handle that, but that's the truth. You need to, when you get to your lowest point, that's when you're at your strongest point.
Right.
You know, because now you're like, you're in the trenches. And once you come out of that, I mean, you're better than you was before you went in it. And now, so I learned how to take the positive out of the negative.
I got to ask you, I still want to explore more of that part of your journey. But having said that, once you get to the top, like when you won America's Got Talent, were you able to stay humble because you knew where you kind of came from and how life can kind of throw some curveballs at you? Or was it kind of, did you throw all that to the wind? You're like, okay, I've arrived.
No, I'm still down there at Landau. You know, and I don't ever want that to change. I never placed myself on a pedestal or anything like that. I still pump my own gas, wash my own car, go to the grocery store. I shop at the Piggly Wiggly, Walmart. I mean, I get my suits from Joseph A. Banks. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
I don't need all of that, because at the end of the day, it's all about being happy and making the people around you happy. You want to take your blessings and pay them forward. That's what makes me sleep well at night. I can't ride around in a Lamborghini and see people on the street that don't have a box to sleep in. Like, it just doesn't make sense to me. But, you know, I want to reach that point in my life where I can go buy a toy like that but still be able to give back to the people that actually need it. You know, but you don't want to – I just never wanted to get lost in that cloud, you know, placing myself in that pedestal and trying to be somebody that I'm not, because the easiest thing that I can do is be myself. And when I went into this, you know, my conversation with my Lord and Savior was to just stay humble.
You went through, you know, kind of an incredible journey just on America's Got Talent. Kind of explain a little bit about what went into that from the first audition through the televised episodes, because a lot of people don't see all the auditions you probably did before you got to the televised ones. And then, you know, there's a shift once the cameras are on you. Tell me how all of those, you know, experiences shaped your whole journey.
Well, the whole thing, you know, came to me, you know, at my lowest moment. I had been washing cars, and then I had my brother had went to prison. When he was in prison, I was doing like a little one-man show here in West Virginia, and I was getting on the front of the newspaper all the time. So one of his cellmates, who was a rich white male, got out of prison and was like, I'm going to build a band around your brother. So he did. When he got out of prison, Wow. Yeah, he came home and I auditioned for him, like in his living room. I just sung like two songs for him. And he was like, I've been collecting newspapers on you since, you know, for 8 years.
Wow.
And I was like, yeah, right. So he pulled out all the newspapers and showed them to me. I was like, wow. And so we started this blues soul band called Top Shelf. And I started doing this show with this band. It was an all-white male band. And I was the front man. I'm the only black guy in the group. And I'm singing blues and soul music. But I could sing all genres, but this is what he wanted to do. So I gave him 2 years of that. And then the band fell apart due to their egos. And whatever. And I just went back to my one-man thing, singing for charity and all of that. And while I was doing such events, somebody broke in my house and stole all the copper out of my walls, all my furniture, all my clothes, man. Everything. So I was down, and I was like, really, and I was going through something with my ex-wife at the time. And I was like, I don't have nothing to lose and everything to gain, and I just need to break, God. And it was just like, it's like it came to me and was like, all you need is a bigger stage. And I'm like, what is the bigger stage? And right at that moment, in the room that I was sitting in, the TV went to a commercial, and it was Howie Mandel. He's like, are you the next winner of America's Got Talent? Do you have what it takes to headline your own show in Vegas? Are you our next $1 million prize winner? And I was just like, whoa. And I started crying. And then I went in another room and signed up for America's Got Talent. I waited for maybe 3 weeks for a confirmation email. Then they told me in the email to wait for a phone call. I waited another 3 weeks for that phone call, I think. And then when they called, my ex at the time hung up the phone.
Wow.
Yeah, and they ended up calling back. I get on the phone. They ask me how I want to do my audition. I could send in a video or come to several different states. I chose New York because I was going to do Frank Sinatra, because I knew that would be a wow factor. You know, because to see me 6'4", skinny, black with dreadlocks, you won't see Frank Sinatra. And I realized that these TV shows, they've seen everything. So I wanted to give them something different, plus give the grandparents something to watch at home on TV, you know, and show the new generation to come, you know, what good music was all about. So I used that to my advantage. I was like, okay, I'm going to go on TV. And everybody was doubting it. Like, man, you shouldn't do Frank Sinatra. You should do Motown. You should do this blues song. I was like, they expect that. If I go out there and do Michael Jackson, it's expected. If I do hip-hop, it's expected. If I do reggae or, you know, any blues, soul song, R&B, it's expected. But to see me singing Frank Sinatra, you just, it's wild. Like, where did that come from? So I stuck with my instincts, and I went on the show. Paid my first flight to New York with my car wash money. And I stayed at the, I can't remember the name of that hotel, but anyway, I stayed there. I went to the Jacob Javits Center, and I stood in line from like 5:48 a.m. to like maybe 6 p.m.
Wow.
And then I got in the building around 6 p.m. and went through a whole nother slew of lines. And I didn't audition until about 9:30, 10 o'clock at night.
And how did you just stay motivated and inspired just sitting there all day?
Just that conversation with my Lord and Savior, man. I knew exactly what I had been through. And I knew at that moment that God groomed me for that moment. I've never had a singing lesson. I've never had a stage coach or presence lesson or anything like that. I picked all this up on life, you know, doing all those small shows for, you know, the Children Home Society and the weekend programs and homeless people and the veterans. It was God's way of grooming me, and it got me ready for that big moment. And so when I got in that line, there was nothing going to get me out of that line, you know. And I stood there, and I dealt with the whole situation. I was the last person to audition.
Wow, you were the last person in New York?
Yeah, I was the last person in the, like, the audition. I remember, like, going in there, and then after I did, like, it was like me and a couple group of other people. And we were, like, the last people in the building. This is, like, 9:30
at night. Did you sing a cappella, or did you have, like, a CD or track?
I had a CD, but I was the only one who brought a CD. And it says that in the contract, you can bring a 90-second version of instrumental or whatever you're going to sing, but everybody showed up without it but me. I'm like, did nobody read this contract? And so, yeah, I show up with my CD, and they didn't have a sound system there for me.
Wow.
So that everybody's on the show is like, behind the scenes, they're all British. So they're like, okay, we're sorry. We don't have a machine for you right now, but we'll get one later. So I'm like, okay. So I sit down. But see, when I walked in the room, I tried to sit at the last seat because I wanted to see everybody audition. This is before the the celebrity judges just before a TV and everything. You do a screening first, like a first audition behind the scenes. There's no cameras, there's no nothing. They do a lot of B-roll of everybody standing in line and all that, but they don't show these auditions. You're in a room with everybody else. Like when you walk in, if you play guitar and you sing, you're in a room with the singers with guitars. You know what I'm saying? If you're in a group, right, in a room with group singers. If you're a sword swallower or a fire breather, you're in the dangerous category over here. And so I was a solo singer. So I'm in a room with all solo singers. Everybody that's in there just sing, you know, solo by themselves. But they gave us the option of having that disc, and I had mine. So I sat in the last seat, and I was like, I want to sit here and watch everybody do their audition so I know what not to do. But they called me first. And so I come up there with my CD, and they was like, oh, I'm sorry. You was actually the only person who bought your CD, but we don't have a sound system in here right now. So can you just wait and let us run all these people through, and we'll get back to you later? And I was like, great. So I grabbed my CD, and I sat in the seat, like, now I get to watch. So I get to watching everybody do their audition. This is in front of just a regular cast of people behind the scenes that run America's Got Talent. And like everybody's getting up there, you know, they're all awesome. You know, they're just not in. They don't have no stage presence or nothing. Like, they ain't moving the judges or anything, or even just us that's watching. I'm sitting there bored. Like, what are they doing? Like, kids, you're blowing it. You know, and so I sit there and watch that. And then they called me again, like, okay, Mr. Murphy, you up next. And I came up again. And was like, oh, I'm sorry. We haven't got that machine in here for you yet. And I was like, don't worry about it. I'll do it a cappella. Right now, I'll do it. You know, so I got up there and I sung a cappella and I sung I've Got You Under My Skin. And the whole room went bananas. Like the contestants, you know, the other people that was auditioning with me, plus the judges that was there, they all went nuts. And they was like, look, we want you to go out in the hallway. No, first they was like, okay, thank you for coming out. If you don't get a call by May, you're not on the show. If you do, you'll be back in April. And we're all walking out of the room, and I'm like, man, I sit here all this time and waited for this, for them just to tell me that. And so on my way out the room, I started singing Wet Willie, Countryside of Life. You ever heard that song?
Yeah.
Yeah, I started singing Wet Willie, Countryside of Life. You can have your buildings all your heavy arithmetic. I don't need no crowded streets, I'm sitting sticking tricks. You know, I started singing that. And the guy was like, come back here, Mr. Murphy, please. And I go back, and he was like, what all can you do? And I was like, anything. I can sing any song you want me to sing. He was like, I'm pretty sure you can, but he said, but that whole Frank Sinatra thing just threw me off. He said, what I want you to do is go out in the hallway and sit down. I'm going to run the rest of these people through here, and then I'm going to take you down to the big room. He said, do not get nervous. There's going to be the big AGT sign, there's going to be a lot of lights and a big cone boom microphone. I want you to sing as loud as you possibly can and do exactly what you just done for me. He said, can you do that? I was like, yes. He was like, okay, wait outside. So I sit out in the hallway and waited. And then all the rest of the people came out, and then the whole building was empty. I was like the only person sitting there, me, this rapper, and a little kid rapper, maybe about 5, 6 years old. He was a little rapper. They took all three of us down to the producer's room. And now there's a lady, British lady, blonde hair, I can't remember her name, but she was the lady who ran everything. And she's like, okay, what's your name? What you gonna do for us? I'm like, I'm Landon Eugene Murphy Jr. I'm about to sing. And I sung that same song again, I've Got You Under My Skin. And she was like, what in the bloody hell? Where have you been? Where's your name? I was like, Landon Eugene Murphy Jr. She's like, that's brilliant. And I was like, wow, I can't believe they love my name. Because, like, all I was growing up, people teased me about my name. And I, you know, I always went by the name of Dooney. D-O-O-N-E.
You know what
I'm saying? It's just a nickname. That's my nickname, is Dooney. You know, so even on the show, all the contestants and the acts would always call me Uncle Dooney. You know what I'm saying? So, but as I did that audition, man, she was like, okay, what I want you to do is go home and lock yourself in your room. Don't go to the gas station. Don't get a speeding ticket because you can't have anything on your record. you know, and then they did a background check on me. All my stuff was clean. They said, you know, they sent me my plane ticket. I go back out there for the actual taping of the audition now. So this is April the 1st, April Fool's Day. I'm at the Hamstein Theater in New York. That's when I stick the gum in my pocket. You know, in my first audition, because I was so nervous. I was talking to Nick Cannon backstage, and it was just like we was brothers, you know what I'm saying? And I got nervous. I was like, oh, man, I'm about to audition. I was the last person to audition again this night. And I'm sitting back there getting my, you know, my throat moist and drinking room temperature water, getting ready. And the guy comes and hands me a wireless microphone. He's like, okay, you're up in 10 minutes. I was like, wow, this is about to happen. So I start chewing this gum, just trying to calm myself down. When I walk out, I see a garbage can and there's a velvet curtain and he's supposed to talk to Nick Cannon and then walk out. But I walk past Nick Cannon because I had already talked to him backstage. So Nick was like, man, down, bro, you got to talk. Hey, you got to talk to me first. So I come back. And if you look at my audition, you see me coming back to shake Nick Cannon's hand. Like, what's up, Nick? And funny. He was like, you just walked right on past me, man. I was like, yeah, when we talked backstage, I just figured they already filmed all that. So I didn't even pay no attention because I blocked the cameras and everything out. So I'm like, I've still got this gum in my mouth, and I still forgot to spit it in that garbage can right there by Nick Cannon. So he pats me on the back, and I go out on stage, and I'm chewing the gum, start talking to Piers Morgan, Howie Mandel, Sharon Osbourne. The whole audience is already screaming like I was already a star, which is weird. It's like when I walked out and I waved at everybody, the whole audience took a big gasp like they had just got a big breath of fresh air. And I walked out there with this corduroy jacket. I still got this jacket, bro. This is what I had. Had this corduroy jacket.
That's crazy.
I had some Levi's that I had bought when I got to New York and some PF Flyers and a Rockerwear button-up striped shirt. That's all I had to my name when I went on stage because somebody had stole all my clothes. So when I got to New York, I had only like a Walmart jogging suit or something. And then I bought those clothes when I got to New York. So I walk out there and I'm chewing this gum and Piers Morgan was like, are you chewing gum? And I was like, yeah. And he's like, y'all wouldn't do that if I was you. So I took it out, put it in my pocket. You know what I'm saying? And the whole audience bust out laughing and cheering and everything. And then I just looked at Nick like, run it, because they about to hit this X. Let's just get into it. So I do, you know, I do that song again. I got you under my skin and it just changed my life forever. But that was, you know, that was it. And then I had to come home and act like nothing happened.
Wow.
Because it didn't May until it didn't air till May 31st, which is a month later. You know?
Did you tell anybody?
You couldn't. You can't.
Wow.
Yeah, you got a confidentiality clause in that contract because they call those spoilers. Like if I had auditioned and went home and told everybody, oh, I'm on this show, you know, no. As soon as somebody go on the internet and say, Larry, tune in, because Landau's on America's Got Talent, man, you forfeit your $1 million.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, so I had to go home. Imagine coming back to a small town of like 3,200 people and act like you don't know what's going on.
Wow. And then you just played it cool, and then you got called back, and then you had to come to L.A., right?
Yeah, first you had, after it aired, May 31st, and they sent me an email, and I had to come back to, I had to go to Vegas Week, which was in Las Vegas. So we stayed at the Planet Hollywood, and we did a whole lot of B-roll. And this was like, Vegas Week is like cuts. They started to cut people. You know, and I was watching everybody get cut. And when I first started doing all this, like, nobody was, like, around me. Like, my producer never even came to talk to me until after Vegas Week. I never even met him.
Wow.
You know, and it was like, I guess he thought I was going to get cut because he never came to talk to me at all until after Vegas Week. He came up to me and was like, hi, my name is Brian. I don't even throw his name out there, but I know his name.
Right.
Hi, I'm such and such, and I'm your producer. And I was like, where you been? Like, he was like, oh, I'm sorry, I got this act and I got this. I was like, well, I'm one of your acts too. He was like, yeah, but I'm just... Yeah, I was like, okay, well, cool. He's like, you need anything? I was like, no, I'm already here now. Like, he's like, you don't need no stage time or anything. I was like, no, give it to the other acts because I don't like to think about it. I like right. to be in the moment. So don't tell me that I got to sing and go down the steps because then I'm going to fall.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But just right. give me the microphone and let me sing and go down the steps. You know what I'm saying? So it was yeah. just like, it was, that's the way I played the whole thing. I was like, I don't want any practice time. I want to just be in the moment. If I mess up, I mess up. If I don't, then it's gold. And that's how I went through the whole show. And, you know, after going through Vegas week, then you come back home for maybe 2 weeks. Then you come out to L.A. for the live rounds. And that's when we stayed at the Sofitel in Beverly Hills.
Yeah, yeah.
It was amazing, man. And everything just was just – I was on cloud nine, man.
And how many rounds did you do once you were in L.A.?
I sung a total of 6 times, I think.
Yeah. And you know what? It was so crazy. Is like, you know, I watched the one where you won. I watched some of the earlier ones. You were always cool as a cucumber and everyone. Yeah. You were just like, no nerves. Just like, all right, let's just do this. Let's wing it.
Yeah, because I went in with the attitude that I already won. Not the show, but in life itself. I am on television doing what I love to do in front of millions. Right. I already won. It's all up to me what I do with it after leaving that show. It's all up to me now. Whether they vote me off this show or whatever, I'm a winner. All I got to do is find another stage now. Market myself the right way, keep my nose clean, and stay humble. So I didn't go with the attitude like, oh, I'm about to win America Got Talent. I never had that cocky attitude. I went on like, man, this is about to change my life. I'm going to get my wheels out of the mud. Maybe I'll end up being the Love Boat guy. But at least it's something to do, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
I didn't go with the attitude like I'm about to win America's Got Talent, because I believe everybody has their different talents, you know, different strokes for different folks. And I think everybody is brave and truly a winner for even stepping on that stage and putting your life and your livelihood on the line, you know, to better yourself. I mean, you're great for doing that. We're all winners. Whether you don't win the whole show or you do, you know, when I'm winning.
As you're doing this, you're getting whittled down to the final two. There has to be a thought when it's just you and one other person. You're like, all right, I'm so close to this.
Yeah.
Or I'm so far away from the success. Yeah. Tell me how you kind of approach that.
Oh, that was weird. I remember when I got like to the top 10 or 8, something like that, I started shaking my head like, this can't be happening. Because I always thought, like, the little kids were going to beat me because they're cute. They're little kids. Right. And I'm pulling for Pop Life, which is Kalani's group. You remember Kalani?
Right, of course.
Yeah, she was in Pop Life. So I'm pulling for them. They're, like, thanking me for giving them good advice. And I'm pulling for the Silhouettes because some of those kids have illnesses, so they could have used the money and all that stuff to, you know, fight some of their symptoms and things like that and create this awareness movement. Then you had Anna Graceman, who played the piano, was a little cute little girl. I mean, it was just all these people around me, but I was just like, man. And then it started getting down. When it got down to the top 4, and it was me, Pop Life, Anna Graceman, and the Silhouettes. I'm like, I'm up against all kids. There's no way I'm about to win this. Wow. You know, these kids is about to blow me out the water. They're talented. Yeah, right. But I think the world saw that I was doing a genre that was just perfect for Vegas.
Right.
Perfect for Vegas. And my attitude was great. And I never, you know, was like,
oh, well, you have an amazing story. I mean, it's like, yeah. You know, a lot of people haven't touched upon this, but there's one point where you were homeless and you went through, you know, your parents separating and going through this huge transition from West Virginia to Detroit and then dealing with kind of gang violence and, you know, families going, you know, through all kinds of obstacles. You went through the ringer in a way that most people never go through or experience, and yet you maintain this positive attitude and you were singing music that, you know, culturally you wouldn't identify with or you shouldn't. And that's what made it so beautiful. It's like, you know, I think your story is like really tremendous, and I think it's an amazing feat that you were able to do all this and play it cool as Frank Sinatra would. You know what I mean? Like all those guys, they would be like, yeah, you're doing it like we did it. You know what I mean? On a different scale, you know? So now they announce you that being the winner. What's that feeling like? How has your life changed? Tell me like how that was a little bit of an adjustment.
It was an amazing feeling. At the time, I didn't really want to win, though. But God had a plan for me. And when they announced me the winner, I just remember putting my hands in my head like, oh, man, here we go. Because now I got to live up to this contract. You know, and I didn't want the contract. I didn't want to stay in Vegas for a year singing these songs. I wanted to travel the world. I wanted to, you know, hire my own band.
Right.
You know, I wanted to do it my way, just like the last song I sung. I wanted to do it my way. So now I know I'm stuck in this contract, but I'm thankful. I'm grateful. I'm like, okay, whatever they need, I'm there. So then, you know, I leave there. I come home. My state gives me my own holiday, my own street. They throw me a huge parade. I started, like, you know, doing these events, charity events, and then I go off to Caesar's Palace and I do my show in Caesar's Palace. The great thing about being in Caesar's Palace was I had Celine Dion's penthouse.
Wow.
And a butler.
That's amazing. Wow.
Yes. And, you know, I'm selling out this the Coliseum in Caesar's Palace. But and then some of the people in the show was telling me, or I just don't want to drop no names, but the people was telling me, you know, show's not selling like we want to, so we don't know if we're going to keep it going or we're going to, and I just didn't want to, like, stay there and waste all my money.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? Because you're paying as you're doing this. You know what I'm saying? You're still paying out money to the management, to the production, to the stagehand, to the wardrobe. So by the time, if I'd have stayed out there, by the time I came home, I'm broke.
Right.
So I was just like, if I can get out of this and y'all don't think the show's gonna sell like y'all wanted to, then I can just leave. So I got out of that contract and I left and I came home and I made $500,000 in like 2 months.
That's amazing. So just like playing shows around town or what?
Right, shows all around the world. I went to Shanghai, China, Germany, all across the United States, from California to New York, Maine to Texas. You know what I'm saying? Everywhere. Only state I haven't been in is Montana and Iowa.
Wow.
Yeah, I've been in every state in the United States except for those two, and maybe Rhode Island.
And were you going to do these, like, big production shows and performances, or was it kind of, like, stripped down? Tell me what that was like.
No, it was big. I made sure it was big. I wasn't going to do it unless it was big. So I came home, and I put together an 18-piece orchestra.
Wow.
Yeah, and all my players come out of the state of West Virginia. They're like, professors at Marshall, deans of music in Marshall and West Virginia University, and some of them from Ohio University, things like that. And I put all these guys together, and I took them on the road with me. And ever since then, that's what I've been doing. For the last 10 years, I've been independent. I just put out my latest album live from Caesar's Palace. I recorded it live in Caesar's Palace on my birthday. It just released October the 1st.
Well, let's play a track from it. Let's play Come Fly With Me. This is Landau Eugene Murphy Jr., Come Fly With Me.
Let's take a trip. Come fly with me, come. Let's fly away. If there's exotic booze that you can use, there's a bar in Fort Bombay. Down in Llama Land, there's a one-man band, and all two, it's good for you. Come on, baby, let's go and float down to the blue. Once I get you up there, where the air is rarefied, we'll just glide. perfect day for a flying honeymoon. They say, come fly with me, let's fly, let's fly away. Once I get you up there, just fly, starry night. Once I get you up there, I'll be holding you so, baby. You make angels cheer because we're together.
We're wide.
That's a lovely day. You just say the words and we'll meet the bird down in Acapulco. Perfect for a flying honeymoon. They say, come fly with me. Come fly with me. Come fly with me. Pack up, let's fly away. And don't tell your mama.
Very nice indeed. So awesome. Now let me ask you, like, you did this, you know, traditional jazz, these standards. Has it pigeonholed you a little bit just because now you're known for this? Is this what you always have to do, or do you kind of feel you can still do what you want because you're an artist and you just want to always evolve?
Yeah, I'm an artist. At the end of the day, I can do what I want to do. So even in my shows, I do Motown in my shows. I do blues, soul, and standards, you know, all in my shows. Plus, I tell my story at the same time, give my testimony. So it's like a whole full roller coaster ride, you know. And I showcase my my band members, you know, with solos and moments where we like mess with each other on stage. So it's a fantastic show, man. I try to make it have that same Rat Pack feel,
right?
You know, because that's the vibe. You want to make people, you know, reach back into their memories of those good times. And you also want to just give people great memories to remember, you know what I'm saying? Like, so
right.
I just try to keep all the negativity away from me. I mean, and this music is blue sky, puppy cloud music. So I don't sing music that's going to degrade you or any woman or any color or creed or whatever place you come from. It's all about having fun. It's all positive and uplifting. And that's what I think I was blessed to do. My blessing was to pay it forward. It's not for me. It's for the world. It's something that God gave me. And I think if I was to be selfish with it, he would take it away.
That's you are a very enlightened being because you seem to have gone, you know, they say from rags to riches, you know, this is a rags to riches story, but you maintain this character that no money can buy. And I commend you for that. Artistically, do you find there is more of a desire to write original music, less of a desire to write original music because you kind of just want to be a performer? Or do you find that the artist within is starting to kind of reign supreme?
Oh, the artist within has always been there. I've always wanted to do original songs. The thing is, once I started doing the Frank Sinatra stuff, everybody wanted to hear it. And then, like right. I said, all the great grandparents and the grandparents came out. They was like, right. I'm gonna fly me to the moon. Can you fly away? When are you gonna do Summer Wind? So that's what you're stuck in. And then I released like two original songs called This A Thing Called Love and Light Up the Night with Love on my latest album titled Landau. That's the only two original songs that I put out, but I'm writing right now. I want to do a whole original album based off the Great American Songbook. I mean, I want it to be in the likeness of a Frank Sinatra, Dean Martin, or Nat King Cole because that is my wheelhouse.
Right.
I want to stay there. But Also, I have a lot of people that want me to do a Motown album. A lot of people want me to do a gospel album. So I want to do all those things. I mean, I wrote one book that was number one on Amazon. I'm an author. You know, I've been forwarding books. I've been writing books. I'm also a graduate. I graduated high school.
Nice.
From while I was going through the pandemic, I actually took that time to graduate high school.
Good for you, dude.
I got a doctorate in music. I do a Landau's Kids Joy Toy Drive, where every year I take all these kids toys that are in the hospital.
That's amazing. Good
and
for
everybody
you.
Can go to this to the website, and they go on to take you straight to a link, straight to Amazon, where you can just buy a toy from maybe $1 up to $20. And then when they get all to the place, I wrap them all myself, me and my girl, and we go deliver them out to these kids at these hospitals.
Good for you. That's amazing, man.
And so it's just all of those things. It's all about paying it forward, man. And you know, and I'm looking forward right now to my 11th annual Christmas tour. And actually, the young lady.
And you're doing your show in West Virginia, correct?
Yes, it's in West Virginia. Yeah.
And, you know, I wanted to ask you, so like, you know, now that you won the show and you've gone through this, and now it's been 10 years, since you won the show, are you kind of back to being like an independent musician, going through the kind of like the ringer of live shows, organizing stuff yourself? Or have you kind of maintained an industry where you still have the same manager, you got booking agents, you kind of have a team around you that's helping you kind of facilitate the roles?
Yeah, I still have my manager. When I won America's Got Talent, they gave me two managers. One of them was Peter Rudge, and one was Mike Matsumoto. But I just felt like they were too distant from me to see who I really was. You know, so I went and picked up two other managers from that 20-80 split. I was like, we're going to have a 20-80 split. I need y'all to like beat her. So I got to hire two more managers, and they're going to get a cut of your, you know, of your half of that. And so they was great with it, because then they didn't have to be around me. They didn't have to pick up the phone. So I got a guy from my hometown, and he's still with me to this day. And I got my lawyer from the weekend program that I used to do these programs with when I was doing my one-man show. He was a lawyer, so I got him on my team also. But now it's just me and my manager and my band, you know, and I have an agency out of New York, and they get me gigs, and my manager makes sure everything's booked, book my flights, everything like that, make sure the band is all good and flights are and rooms are booked, and we go knock out a show. You know, I can scale it back to a 9-piece, sometimes even 6. But most of the time it's a 9-piece band. And
man, I've got a 6-piece band. I've got a 6-piece band that I tour with, and I think that's a lot. So I can't imagine a 9-piece, man.
Yeah,
that's,
usually
that's a lot.
18. Usually when I'm out, it's 18 of us. 18 people.
Man, and you guys do, I assume you do bus tours, or how do you do it?
Yeah, sometimes it's a bus. I'll get a driver, and we'll all get in our bunks, and I have my special bunk. We'll drive through the what is it? What would they call it? The DMC? DMV?
Wow.
That's the D.C., Maryland, and Virginia. Yeah, the DMV.
And you do that? Wait, you got 18 people on one bus?
Yeah.
Wow. That's amazing.
We have a lot of bunks, and then in the back of the thing it has like a big living room area. And a lot of people just stretch out in there, and we put all the instruments under the bus. I mean, it's fun. We have a lot of fun. We have a lot of fun on those tour buses. But then a lot of times it's just flight straight to LA, land, go to our hotel, leave the hotel, go sound check, have something to eat. Then I'll do a meet and greet with my fans, go put on my suit, come out, do the show. After the show, I do another signing, autographs, and another little meet and greet with the fans, and I'm the last person to leave the building. Back to my hotel, go to sleep, wake up, get on the plane, go to the next city. Same thing over and over.
Man, and you're a hustler, man. You are a hustler.
Yeah.
Indeed. Let's play another track off your record. Let's play a song for you. This is Landau Eugene Murphy Jr.
I got a song for everybody who's ever appreciated the gift that God has given me. I used to love to sing this song for my grandmother, my mom, friends, and now to my fans. Thank you. I've been so many places in my life and time. I've sung a lot of songs. I've made some bad rides. I've acted out my life on stages with 10,000 people watching. But we're alone now, and I'm singing this song to you. I know your image of me is what I hope to be. I've treated you unkindly, but darling, can't you see? There's no one more important to me. We're alone now, and I'm singing this song to you. You taught me a precious secret of a true love, withholding nothing. You came out in front when I was hiding. And if my words don't come together, listen to the melody, 'cause my love is in hiding. I love you in a place where there's no space of time. I love you for all my life. You're a friend of mine. And when my life is over, remember we were together. We were alone, and I was singing this song to you. Space of time. I love you for all my life. You're a friend of mine. And when my life is over, remember when we were together. We were alone, and I was singing this song to you. We were alone, and I was singing this song to you. We were alone, and I was singing this song.
Beautiful, beautiful, man.
Thanks, man.
What a great version of that song. What a, just a great singer you are, and messenger. I'd say you're a messenger. You're doing a show with Holly Forbes this Friday. tell me how, what's like the prep for a show like that for you on the day of?
Just being in the moment. I mean, we're going to do a lot of press and TV for these next couple of days, signing autographs at the local Hallmarks and things like that throughout the tri-state. And then it's showtime. We're going to get there. We're going to do a rehearsal. I mean, I'm pretty sure she wants to rehearse her songs. I'll do my Christmas CD entitled Christmas Made for Two. And she'll sing whatever she wants to sing. I'm just going to let her do her thing. We'll probably do some duets together also.
Awesome.
I'll be home for Christmas, the Christmas song and things like that. And I'm just excited to, you know, share the stage with her. I mean, she's I got a connection with Holly Forbes through Dream Night. Dream Night is a thing that this lady friend of mine named Wendy Kay does, where she puts on these talent shows for local people in the state somewhere, anywhere in different states. And I'm usually the judge. And Holly Forbes was actually in one of those contests in Kentucky that I wasn't a judge at. And I don't know if she won it or she did, but that's my connection to her. And so when I seen her on TV, you know, my girlfriend was like, wow, you know, I think she should be on your Christmas tour. And I was like, well, I ain't gonna be able to have her now. She's on Voice, like, you know. And then when they let her go, I was like, okay, let's just keep in contact with her. So we had been in contact with her since my girlfriend said that, since she suggested it. We had been in contact with her the whole time. And then, you know, she was just letting us know it might not happen because, you know, after winning, you got to go on this big press tour and you have to do all these things. And I know because I had to do the same thing. But after they let her go, you know, we reached out to her and she was like, yes. And so, you know, we got the contracts out and signed and here we go. Me and Holly about to give you some Christmas joy.
Let me ask you, I'm going to ask you a very real question now. Yeah. Do you feel like now that you've been a seasoned touring musician, was it everything you thought it would be? And I ask you this because I've been a touring musician for 18 years and I've been playing festivals like Bonnaroo and Summerfest, and I still do them all the time. And when you're on the other side, it gives you this perspective. Tell me what that perspective is like for you. Do you feel like it was everything you thought it would be, or is it different?
It's a little different. As far as me myself, I think it's everything that I thought it would be. But as far as the industry, you know, the industry is not the same. The record companies aren't the same anymore because, you know, people don't buy CDs anymore.
Right.
You know, everything is digital and downloaded and Bluetooth. You know, but even the record companies aren't the same. I mean, it's just, but I wouldn't know really that because I wasn't in the record industry back then. But to the time that I got in it, I realized it wasn't the same as, you know, when LL got it. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
So it's just like, I think it's kind of better now because you can be an independent artist.
Right.
And we do have the internet, so we can actually sell our music without signing that big contract and being controlled. You know, and then that's just something that I didn't want to be. I didn't never want to be anybody's puppet. Like I said at the beginning of this interview, the easiest thing you can do in this world is be who you are. It's the easiest thing in the world. But when you're being somebody for somebody else, that's the hardest thing.
And you know what? That's funny that you say that. We could do a whole interview just on this topic because you think that's what you want out of life until you actually start doing it. And then you realize none of this is what I want. All I really want to do is be myself.
Right.
And be myself in a world on my terms.
Yeah.
Because the moment you start doing, I mean, you see all these like famous people. We talk about Michael Jackson, Whitney Houston, all these other, you know, great artists that we love. a lot of these people weren't happy because they weren't able to do, you know, their art on their own terms, or, exactly, you know, just able to live a life without going to outside substances or resources, exactly, to find happiness. So it's like, you seem to have found that just from being grounded. I want to play one more song from your record. But yeah, man, you definitely have your head on your right shoulders, man. We definitely have to do a show together, man. We definitely.
Oh yeah, yeah, let's do that.
Well, this is "Ain't No Sunshine" by Landau Eugene Murphy Jr. No off his latest record.
And that guy is from West Virginia, the legend.
It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. This house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away, wonder this time where she's gone. Wonder if she's gonna stay. Ain't no sunshine. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes away, and I know. Sunshine when she's gone. Only darkness every day. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. And this house just ain't no home. Anytime she goes away. Sunshine when she's gone. It's not warm when she's away. Ain't no sunshine when she's gone. She's always gone too long. Anytime she goes. Anytime she goes away. Anytime she goes away.
Amazing. Landau, we didn't mean to cut you off. Tell us what you were saying about West Virginia.
That song is by the legendary Bill Withers, also from West Virginia.
You know, I was in a performance of John Legend and the Roots at the Grammy Museum, okay? And it's a small room where they do these performances. And John Legend gets on the microphone and he says, this one's for Bill Withers. I asked him to come out tonight. And he's in the room, and he was sitting like a row in front of me, and I'm a huge Bill Withers fan. Yeah. And like right after the show, the whole room shuffled out, and it was just like this crowded room. Nobody bothered him or anything, and I was like so far away because there were so many people just like shuffling out. And when I got outside to this little lobby, he was like a phantom. He just disappeared into thin air, man, because I couldn't see him or nothing. But I was like, man, it was just so cool. It was just such a moment of like, oh my God, he's a mythical figure to me. And he's
you should have went and spoke to him. He's so down there. He was spent. He just, you'd have had to get somebody to pry you away from him because he wants to talk. The guy is like, he's just like a walking gem, man. He has all these gems and all this knowledge of the industry and history of music and everything, man. And I actually got to, we both got inducted to the West Virginia Music Hall of Fame together.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so I got to hang out with him. And and we sit in the same row together. He almost got us kicked out, man, because he was like... because he was like, even he got upset about this one guy who like gave him a little bit of grief over the way he introduced him. Because the guy wanted Bill to like read this whole thing of accolades. And Bill's like, I ain't got time for this. I ain't about to read all of this. You know, and so Bill did it the way he wanted to do it. And the guy was like upset about it. But Bill was like sitting next to me and the whole time he's in my ear, like, I can't believe this man had to do it.
That must have been a surreal moment for you, the Motown stuff and all the soul it's music so you were funny, doing. Man.
It was the funniest thing ever. This was taped. It was actually on a PBS. It was like the West Virginia Music Inductee Ceremony, and we're sitting there. And people are like, "Shh!" And I can't stop laughing because he's in my ear. He's like right here in my ear, like, "I can't believe he had a nerve. Tell me I didn't introduce him right. He should have had that woman up to introduce him. I ain't got to introduce him like that. I don't want to introduce him." And it was just like, he wouldn't stop. He would not stop. But he's a legend. After that, I got to do his 81st birthday party live on the levee in Charleston, West Virginia. It was during his, like, I guess his high school reunion time, and so all his classmates and everybody was there, including himself. And then the next year, I think he passed away. So, you know, rest in peace to the legendary Bill Withers, man.
He's the man.
Oh, yeah. But he was another person who gave me some gems, man. He always told me, say, don't worry about the money. And you notice Bill Withers has one of the greatest catalogs of all times, but he walked away from that whole fame thing.
Right.
He was just like, I'm just going to make music. That's all he did. He showed up at certain things and did, you know, Lean On Me or Ain't No Sunshine or something like that, Grandma's Hand, but you heard his music everywhere, but you never seen him.
Right.
You know, he didn't want the spotlight, and that's what he instilled that within me too. It was just always just, man, just stay humble and do what you love to do. Don't let the industry control you. Don't let it go to your head, because at the end of the day, it's all about your health and happiness. And so, I mean, that's...
Wise words.
And that's, you know what I'm saying? I wish you would have got that moment. You should have.
Man, you know, it's funny. It's like I've met so many, like I've met Stevie Wonder, I've met Quincy Jones, all these great people. But that was like, I knew that was my chance to try and meet them, and that was it. It was like, sometimes there's some people, it's just like, man, it's weird too. It's like I've had these like really great run-ins with some of my heroes, like Paul McCartney, all these great people, but he was one of them, and he was just like maybe 10 feet from me. I was just like, man, there's so many people. I know that I would have had to bum rush a lot of other people to get to him, so I was like, I'm not gonna do that. You know, I'll just see if it happens. If it doesn't happen, it is what it is, you know. But yeah. I would have loved to have met him.
And you actually watched the 83 Motown 25th as a nursery special, right? So you remember Patti LaBelle was on there with Joe Cocker.
Yep.
I remember my mom used to always ask me if I ever got famous, who I would want to sing with. And I always said Patti LaBelle and Aretha Franklin. And I actually got to sing on America's Got Talent in the finale with Patti LaBelle.
That's amazing, dude.
She took me to Pink's Hot Dogs. Yeah, we rode around in her limo, and she took me to Pink's Hot Dogs. I didn't have to wait in line or nothing. And we took pictures together, and they still have them on Sunset. I think it's on Sunset, right next
Sunset
to
Sunset La Brea. I live right by there, man.
Right next to the Guitar Center, yep, something like right. that.
I used to work there, man.
Well, go in there. If you look behind the grill, you'll see a picture of Patti LaBelle and the cooks and me.
That's awesome. I'll have to do that, man, next time. Landau, yeah. Where can people find you if they want to find your music and all that good stuff?
LandauMurphyJr.com. I'm also on Twitter at LandauEugeneJr. and on Instagram at LandauMurphyJr.
Awesome. You know? You've been a wonderful guest on Wake Up Hollywood. We wish you nothing but success. I'm going to personally email you, and we are going to collaborate on some music because it just needs to happen, man. You're a great soul, and I appreciate you taking the time and wish you nothing but the best of luck for this next upcoming performance and the rest of your tour. And looking forward to hearing more music from you, man.
Hey, thanks, man. You can also find all that music on Spotify, too. It's out on all platforms, but I know Spotify. Yeah,
that's the big one, right? That's the one we all got to go to. Thanks, well, happy holidays, Landau, and I wish you and your family the best. And, man, let's definitely have you back on the show next time you got another release or another big show, okay?
Hey, same to you, man. Thanks a lot. Let's go.
Be good, man. Cheers.
Listening to Wake Up Hollywood with Nikki Corulla and Eddie Pence, right here on LA Talk Radio.